Alrighty, Bill, thank you very much. And here we go. It is time for Connections here on MSO. I'm Rick Moore, and along with Bill Newell, Josh Arnold, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. Anybody else? Yeah, we have a lot of guests coming up here this morning, and we're going to talk a lot, primarily about, of course, the emergency that continues here in Massachusetts, in the country, and pretty much around the world. So, this morning, and we're going to get right to our interviews here in just a second, this morning, we will be talking with a number of people, including starting off with Salem Mayor Kim Driscoll, who has a lot of information to impart to us this morning about the goings-on in Salem and how things are going there and how things are functioning. Bill will be talking to Beverly State Representative Jerry Paracella coming up in just a little while. We'll also be checking in with David Kemsky. He is the president of AET Labs, and they do some tremendous work. They're based in Essex. They do a lot of work with school systems in terms of high technology, and they're also helping out with the emergency situation by manufacturing certain goods as well. And we'll finish up by chatting with Bill Kirk from the Lawrence Eagle Tribune. He is our eagle eye on the Merrimack Valley. I haven't talked with Bill in a while. See what's going on up in that area up in the Merrimack Valley as well. So we hope that you're safe. We here in Eastern Massachusetts had a bit of a windstorm yesterday, not a lot of rain. The wind did some damage, but not too bad on the North Shore, so we escaped that pretty well. And you just heard most of the stories on North Shore today certainly revolved around what's happening with the virus. I guess the big stories right now concern everybody wearing some kind of a face shield of some sort or another, some kind of face covering when out in public, and most definitely when you go into buildings such as pharmacies or grocery stores, supermarkets, that kind of thing, where you have to interact with people, you should be wearing your face covering. And it's advised that you do that all the time, I guess, when you're outside, but I suppose if you're out there by yourself, you probably don't need it. That's my opinion. The other thing, of course, revolves around schools, whether schools will be working through the so-called April vacation week, which begins on Monday. I believe Monday is Patriots Day in the area. And most of the schools trying to decide whether or not it even makes any sense to get back into session in person or just stay online and work through the April vacation online. So that's an issue that's being talked about all over the North Shore, and I'm sure that'll pop up during this next hour. If you have some suggestions, information, anything you want to pass along to us, please do so at msonewsports@gmail.com, msonewsports@gmail.com. And also, if you'd like to leave a recorded message, either a shout-out or some kind of a news tip, you can do that at 978-325-3638, 978-325-3638. 3638. That's our recording line, our recording phone number here at msonewsports@gmail.com. Our producer and engineer is Bill Proposky. He keeps us on the air, and everybody else keeps us trying to get the information out there that we want to impart to you. So we're going to get right to it. We'll start with our interview with Mayor Driscoll coming right up here on Connections on this Tuesday here. It's the middle of April already, so stay with us, and we'll have our first interview coming right up.
MSO News Sports is a unique multimedia website providing exclusive news and sports content for the North Shore. Our goal is to keep you connected to your local neighbors throughout Essex County and beyond. We feature the best of the North Shore, and we couldn't provide this service without the powerful support of our local sponsors. Like Sylvan Street Grill in Peabody and Salisbury, the Bradford Tavern in Rowley. Just like us, they care about the North Shore. Check out all of our podcasts and share our website with your friends. Email us at msonewsports@gmail.com. msonewsports@gmail.com. Again, we are your connection to the best of the North Shore. MSONewsports.com.
All right, we're back now with the Mayor of Salem, Kim Driscoll. And Madam Mayor, it's our usual... No, it's not our usual anything. How are you doing?
We're okay. You know, we're doing as well as can be expected, and everyone's doing their part.
I think that's pretty much the case across the North Shore and hopefully elsewhere as well. And I want to start with the most recent updates at Salem.com. There is a consistent update almost on a daily basis for COVID-19 information. And I think the most recent post was on Friday. And it has to do, I think, pretty much across the spectrum. Everybody is expected to cover your nose and your mouth now with a kind of mask. But what's the latest update from your point of view?
Yeah, earlier this week, the Board of Health passed an order requiring that anyone entering an essential business, that includes customers and employees, so that's grocery stores, pharmacies, any businesses that remain open, to have the facial covering on. The rule also applies to anybody picking up takeout food from a restaurant, to communal spaces, those common areas in building and commercial complexes, and really just addressed to cut down on the spread of the virus. The Board of Health felt it was important that this be an order, so it's not a recommendation, it's a requirement, and we're hoping everyone will work with us and cooperate and put a facial covering on. It doesn't have to be a surgical mask. In fact, they'd prefer you leave those for the professionals, and it can be a bandana, a scarf, nothing fancy, but just something that covers your nose and mouth.
Mm-hmm. And we're sort of used to seeing that with the winter cover-ups. It's not that surprise out there, but so people are definitely getting into it. And along those lines, I read it might have been in the Salem News or the Gloucester Times, people are discarding these masks in the weirdest of places. So, I mean, that's another thing the Board of Health wants us to do is to be more careful with our trash.
Absolutely. Our DPS units are telling us they're seeing more and more examples of litter and of gloves and masks just being littered on the side of the road. If you look in the parking lot of a grocery store, people are just dumping, you know, those materials there. It's not only is it disrespectful, it's illegal. Like, you got to be more responsible with those items. You don't want somebody else picking up something that might have a virus on it. And we're going to really try and reinforce that with every message we have, not to leave these items on the side of the road for somebody else to pick up.
I noticed that on the updates, there was a city council meeting on Thursday that was scheduled. Now, is this done by teleconferencing or Zoom meetings?
Yep, all of our public boards are meeting using Zoom, and we've got a public-facing platform so people can call in or participate in the meetings via Zoom video. And there's a methodology if you have a public comment, how to recognize you. So it's different. You're seeing a lot many more people participating. A typical city council meeting, you know, you might have a half a dozen folks in the audience if there's nothing really, really hyped up on the agenda. And every meeting we've had, at least 20, 25, 30 participants, and some of the ones that had items that are of interest, we were up in the 60s. Mm-hmm. So the being able to participate, follow a effort of your own home, I think that's actually something that's going to be with us post-COVID as a way to engage people where they're at. You shouldn't have to come down to City Hall, and now we've got a way to enable that.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. We'll have to see where that does go. The other thing, well, there's many things I want to talk about, but this is sort of like when you're in a sporting event or a marathon or, dare I say it, even in combat, you have this initial surge of energy and adrenaline where everything gets up and running and everybody's volunteering and everybody's doing what you're supposed to do. But now we're in the middle of this siege. I mean, this is 3, 4, 5 weeks down the road. And I'm wondering what food banks are doing, because as I mentioned, everybody was up and running. There were restaurants, contributing and so on. But it's beginning to take its toll. And how are things going with the food banks in Salem?
You know, I think just there's a surge of people who need food, who were working and now not only are not working, don't even have a job to go to. So we've seen an uptick in activity, both at the Salem Food Pantry and Citizens Inn, and they have responded amazingly, right? So the Salem Food Pantry providing pantry items at our drop-offs for school lunches. Citizens Inn, HITIC, they are just over the line in Peabody, and they serve both Salem and Peabody residents. Huge uptick in the number of folks who are interested in having either pantry items delivered or who need to have food. So in our schools, and here in Salem, we've got 14 grab-and-go breakfast and lunch sites set up, and we're doing over 1,000 meals a day. So, you know, we want to make sure that certainly no child or family goes hungry. And, you know, in these unfortunate times, out of your own, you know, nothing to do with your own responsibilities here, you may not have the work or the resources to get food. So these groups are stepping up.
What are you hearing from the business community, Mayor Driscoll, in terms of how the businesses that are closed are doing? Or I don't really know what question to ask, except, you know, financially, this is taking a huge hit everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just so disheartening to walk into downtown Salem and see so many places closed up. You know, the windows are dark. It has to be that way now, so we're not, you know, advocating for anything different given the public health crisis. But if you're a business owner, you're not making any money if customers aren't able to come through the door. So I think folks are trying to figure out how to hold on. We're trying to work with them to figure out how to help them hold on and be a partner. We don't want to have COVID-19 end and walk into a city in a central business district that has no activity. So we're trying to figure out what those needs are and how we collectively can support them, whether it's the federal relief packages we're seeing, state aid assistance, and things that the city can do. We're hopeful that we can sort of take the curse off things to the extent that's possible.
What's the status of the personal protective equipment, as far as you know, in the city, in terms of what people need, either at the hospital or at clinics or wherever?
Yeah, I think the hospital is in decent shape. They're still being thoughtful about, you know, rationing equipment. It's not like the, you know, an opportunity just to have PPE, use it multiple times throughout your shift. They're really trying to be mindful of that. And in the public sector, we've been buoyed by the number of donations that we've received and have done, obviously, additional ordering ourselves. So I think we're in decent shape. Again, your days of supply really matter here.
Mm-hmm.
We're certainly okay for the next foreseeable weeks, and we've got an order in and hope that will come through as we move forward.
Final couple of quick questions here. What's the situation like for those who are either in homeless or need shelters I guess that's it, you know, what's it like for them?
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously a difficult situation if you need to quarantine at home. You know, there's 141 cases of or individuals who tested positive for COVID in Salem, and the vast majority of those folks are able to recuperate at home. They have to self-isolate and you know, for a period of time and make sure they're not symptomatic going forward. And can be sort of released from quarantine. Well, that's really difficult to do if you're homeless, because most of the shelters just don't have the space to allow the distance or the ability to really self-isolate. That's not how a shelter is set up. We've worked collaboratively with the cities of Lynn and Beverly to set up a temporary shelter for any homeless individual who needs to quarantine. These are people who are not COVID positive, but have been in close contact with somebody who was COVID positive. And so we've got, with the assistance of LifeBridge running it, and a whole lot of people coming together, our emergency medical staff at Atlantic Ambulance, police and fire are setting up this shelter to make it available for homeless individuals from our communities.
Do you have a checklist each day, either mentally or actually, where you check off and say, okay, this worked, this didn't, that kind of thing? And, you know, priority-wise, are the things you go through each day and say, okay, this is what we have to do, or this is what we've done well?
Yeah, I think it's really important. I'm trying to jot down, you know, a few things a day that help me remember what we want to think about post-COVID, right? Like, this is an interesting thing that would be with us, or for the next time. Hopefully there never is a next time, but, you know, there's rules and experiences that can be applied to other, you know, leadership opportunities going forward on different issues. But I think for the most part, most of the to-do lists end up getting changed, modified, and amended throughout the day because you're reacting to a circumstance. So we've got ourselves divided up into teams. There is a really talented group of staff people that work for the city, able to work with as department heads, and everyone's, you know, sort of got a team that they're responsible for and are working through issues. And here's the goal, here's the objective, here's the value system, now go, right? And they're partnered with nonprofits, with other community partners, businesses and whatnot to accomplish those goals, whether it's checking in on seniors. We've got a whole group of folks who have called every senior citizen over the age of 70 in Salem to make sure they're aware of resources. We've got another group that's just focused on economic development, recovery and revitalization. What are these programs that currently exist to help with recovery? How are we thinking about revitalization? What can we do to assist? And then the on-the-ground stuff, what's happening with group homes, what's happening with senior care facilities. Do our healthcare professionals need anything? Can we be of assistance there? So there's a lot of balls in the air, but there's some really talented people helping lead these efforts.
Fantastic. All right, I have just two more things. One, the schools. I saw that MCAS has been waived for this year. What's the update on the school system?
Yeah, right now schools are still closed through May 4th. I think if anyone if I was a betting woman, I would suggest that schools are probably going to be closed for much longer than May 4th. But that call has not been officially made. I think we want to understand what the governor's thinking. And I know he's mindful of trying to open schools, but the likelihood of that seems less and less the longer the situation goes on.
Finally, Madam Mayor, is there a routine that you've established now in the last 3 or 4 weeks, or is it pretty much fly-by-wire, as the old astronauts used to say, the test pilots?
We like to say we've definitely, we're building and flying stuff at the same time, for sure.
Yeah.
But there's definitely some routines. Communication's a big piece of it, so we have regular check-ins. You know, there's a rhythm to that. And opportunities to troubleshoot in between if necessary. But trying to keep everybody in the loop among our senior staff is really, really important, because even if you aren't sort of having anything to do with the immediate response within respect of your responsibilities, it's important that you know why this something is important that we need you to do in relationship to this issue. So the regular communication points are key. And then the rest of it is, you know, trying to get out at least to see what's happening on the ground. It was really great, not this past Friday, but the Friday before. I helped serve some senior meals with Root and Jewish Family Services that are working in our senior complexes, like super uplifting. It was a rainy, miserable day, Rick, with winds going nuts, gale force winds, crazy. And it was awesome just to get out of City Hall and, like, see some of the activities on the front line, so to speak. And I'm heading to Citizens Inn today. We're providing them some additional support, and I'm looking forward to, like, seeing their operation, thanking the volunteers, and really, you know, kind of buoy your spirits at a time like this.
And it's going to be another rainy, windy, miserable day, too. So I think, I guess last thing, a message about something positive. You just mentioned lifting, and I think we've seen that. John Krasinski has this weekly thing out on Facebook or YouTube, wherever it is, called Some Good News. And you just mentioned some good news. So what's your final message to residents in the area?
Yeah, I will say I'll share some good news. We have been really struggling with an affordable housing issue, as you know, pre-COVID. So that only gets worse as you're in the situation like this. And we were able to place 4 families at the Bates apartment residential complex dorms at Salem State on Friday. These are folks who are either in a motel or in a shelter, a family shelter. In some instances, some of their kids were split up from them. And so it felt great to be able to have people for their Easter holiday have their family together in one place. And, you know, kudos to Salem State for stepping up. These are the apartment-style dorms, so they've got a small kitchen. And, you know, it's just, you got to, you know, small victories, right? Small victories. We're counting our blessings for those right now.
That's the new mantra. And that is Salem Mayor Kim Driscoll with MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore.
This is Connections on MSONewsSports.com.
State Representative Jerry Parasella is joining us from Beverly. Jerry, welcome. Good to be talking with you.
Thank you. It's great to be talking to you from more than 6 feet apart.
Exactly. We're definitely social distancing on the long distance, if you will. Well, Representative, it's coronavirus, COVID-19, that's everything. So what is the latest from the state or from your office as far as the implications or the protocols that we're getting from the state?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we've ever seen anything like this in our lifetime, and hopefully never will again. I mean, from my perspective, you know, my office, most of the calls these days and emails and text messages and Facebook posts, they're trying to communicate with anywhere they can, is folks trying to get their unemployment insurance claims. And, you know, the first week of March, the state had 7,500 people apply for unemployment, and last week we had over 184,000. So it's just a huge, huge uptick in the amount of folks that have been laid off from their jobs and now trying to get unemployment. I think overall the state's done a pretty good job of handling that amount of claims, but there are folks who, you know, have had trouble hearing back or trying to file their claims and running into some issues. So we've been doing a lot of work with those folks to try to help them process their claims, because it's really essential to them. People are trying to make their mortgage payments, pay their rent, buy food. I mean, to go from one of the lowest unemployment rates we've had in the history of Massachusetts to now the hot short period of time.
Jerry, you know, I told somebody the other day, I have empathy, if you will, for the state government, because it's a difficulty trying to ramp that service up, you know, as dramatically as it needed to be increased in such a short period of time. And I also understand that there's a staffing piece with some of these unemployment claims, that if there's a one little mistake or something's not quite right, it really requires personal attention, like a phone call with an operator from the state. And obviously the numbers there were never there before. Why should they be there before? Because the unemployment claims were much smaller than they were.
Yeah, I mean, we were bustling right along with our economy, doing really well, and then just to have literally 20 to 30 times the amount of claims in such a short period of time. I know Governor Baker has talked about hiring, you know, at least 500 more people to help with the Department of Unemployment Assistance, and, you know, just trying to ramp that up. And, you know, there's just, and it's unprecedented. There are people who normally wouldn't be eligible for unemployment benefits, like self-employed or contractors. They call 1099 employees who are going to be eligible. So that just increases the caseload even more. So, yeah, it is. It's just unprecedented times, and we're just hoping that, you know, some sort of miracle or whatever can happen. Folks can be tested quickly, and hopefully a vaccine can be developed, because unfortunately, it just seems like this is not going to end quickly.
Yeah. I like you. I'm optimistic. I mean, I'd like to be optimistic. I don't know if I can't say I'm optimistic, but I think that, you know, I'm hoping that science is so remarkable these days that something happens here. And we have 3 weeks until that May 4 deadline, you know, that the governor proposed, you know, several weeks ago or a couple of weeks ago, extending the shutdown. And, who knows whether something will be ready by that time? Probably not. But testing is a big part of it, isn't it, Jerry, to get additional testing in place? And it looks like we're on the right track there, but still got to have a long way to go.
You mentioned, I mean, one thing that we're fortunate about in Massachusetts is we really are the healthcare leader probably throughout the world. And some great minds are working on testing, working on vaccines, working on ways to protect our first responders. So, you know, there are great minds. You know, this is sort of our Manhattan Project, the 21st century, trying to come up with a way to battle this particular virus. And, you know, we do have a lot of folks, you know, paying an incredible amount of attention to it. So we're hopeful that something can happen that'll help get us back to work, get the economy back again, and get people safe. You know, that May 4th deadline, it's hard to see what's going to happen. The Secretary of Education did cancel the MCAS requirements this year, so I think there's still some question about whether or not the kids can get back to school on May 4th. You know, that's a huge issue. The remote learning has been a challenge for some folks who may not have adequate internet access. So they're just challenges that you never would have probably thought of before. Just basics like going shopping, going to school, going to work. You know, it's just a transformed our lives just incredibly.
It is. It's a remarkable how much people have been able to, well, have shut down the work piece. In other words, traffic is way down. Dust pollution apparently is way down as well. Parking at the commuter rail stations is way down as well. I mean, significantly down. It is remarkable as to what has happened. And Jerry, have you heard from area businesses like Beverly businesses at all, from business people? I'm sure you must hear some things.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm constantly in touch with, like, the Chamber of Commerce and Beverly has Beverly Main Streets, and I've been sending them a lot of information to try to help their membership, you know, whether it's apply for SBA loans. But, yeah, I mean, the restaurants are hurting. We did make some changes to allow restaurants to sell beer and wine to go, which wasn't permitted before. It's just the business owners, it's very, very difficult for small business folks, especially those who are not deemed an essential service. Yeah, it's just been a very tough, you know, restaurants that were really looking forward to the spring and summer season now are just on a lifeline trying to hang in there as best they can. And it's just been a very difficult situation for sure. And even those restaurants that still do take out, they're telling me that, you know, business is off considerably. It's just a very difficult situation, no question about it.
Yeah, even the takeout protocol, if you will, for a restaurant who's not designed to do that necessarily is very difficult to have a volume business, and that's what restaurants need. It's a volume business like other businesses, grocery stores. They're doing a lot of volume, obviously, but restaurants, it's different. They're just not set up to do that, while grocery stores are designed to do that. So it's every business is unique and different. And I mean, what about the reopening piece? I mean, having schools reopen May 4 probably is the last thing that would reopen, I'm thinking, because of, you know, crowded classrooms and those kinds of things. Well, maybe businesses, some of them could possibly open. What are you hearing about that in Massachusetts? Any leaks at all on that front?
I think the issue really is getting the testing piece in place, and then I think they can have more confidence that that we can do that. You know, without that testing component and having people know whether or not they're a carrier or there's talk that many people may have already gotten the coronavirus and didn't even know it or had very mild symptoms. So, I mean, I think that's a huge issue, or people can be asymptomatic for a couple of days and have the virus. And so that's the problem, I think, is really you've got to tackle this health issue first. You know, people are desperate to get back to work. People are desperate to get back with their lives. But if we do it too early and then we just end up with another big spike and we don't use the curve, then I think that could just lead to even more problems down the line. You know, you had mentioned, commuting and things like that. I mean, in Beverly, we have over 2,000 people a day that take commuter rail from Beverly. Now the ridership is down like almost 90%. The parking lots are empty at commuter rail. It's just an eerie scene when you drive by, for example, the Beverly Depot, and there's very, very few cars there. It's just an incredible scene that I've never experienced anything like it.
Jerry, I'll let you go. I'm just maybe let you give an open-ended comment to anything I didn't ask you about. But obviously, at this time, we've always honored our first responders, police, fire, medics, EMTs, all those kinds of people. Obviously, our medical folks have day in and day out are on the front line. But in particular, they are now. But, you also think of all these people that are keeping the economy going, all the workers in the drug stores and the grocery stores and all those people are so – now we know how incredibly valuable they are to keeping clean.
That's incredible. I mean, we do have Beverly Hospital here, and, you know, my brother's a nurse at Beverly Hospital. My niece is a nurse, and, you know, I talk to them all the time. And just the heroic work that they're doing on the front lines, literally, of this battle. And like you mentioned, whether it's a grocery store clerk, somebody driving the bus to get folks to work. It's just incredible. And they're willing to come to work every day, not knowing, you know, what the situation is that they're facing. So we're certainly very thankful for them, and certainly the first responders and healthcare workers and everybody else. Thank you for what you're doing. You know, someone had mentioned today, and I thought it was a great idea, we should be having a deck boat parade for them when this is all over.
Well,
to honor them.
That's a pretty good idea, isn't it? Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Yeah. They're the real heroes.
Yeah, they are. Well, that's a terrific idea. Well, Well, Jerry, always good talking with you. Obviously, we wish it was under different circumstances, and hopefully the next time we talk, we hope it will be dramatically different circumstances for the better. So, Representative, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Bill. Yep. Hopefully you and your family are well.
Yep, you too. Stay safe. Jerry Parosella, state rep from Beverly, here on MSO News Sports.
Harrington Trophy has been rewarding the North Shore for over 30 years with quality custom awards, screen printing, embroidery, and more. We pride our family-owned business on our exceptional customer service and quality products for the right price. Custom t-shirts, sweatshirts, warm-up suits, hats, along with the area's top trophies, plaques, glass awards, we are the one-stop shop for end-of-the-year banquets or advertising your small business through apparel. Come see us at Harrington Trophy, Chestnut Street, Lynn, or harringtontrophy.com.
Enjoy the taste of summer all year round at Cherry Farm Creamery. Pick up an ice cream cake for that special occasion. Cherry Farm Creamery offers the best ice cream right off Route 128 on Conant Street in Danvers. Or visit them at cherryfarmcreamery.com.
All right, we're back. We have made our connections on connections. I'm Rick Moore, along with our, let me get this thing back here. Let's see here. Gotta get the right mic, boys. That's what happens when things don't go. All right, here we go. All right, we're back. We're going to join now by Bill Newell, Josh Arnold, and let's say good morning. And Bill, just heard from your interview with Jerry Parosella. It seems like the more things change, the more they stay the same. We're sort of stuck still in this limbo state. But I don't know. What are your observations this morning?
You know, I was just trying to pull up some data here just to add something totally different here. And then I lost one piece of data, and I don't know why I lost it here because I'm out of the – oh, here it is, out of the Salem News. So you just had Mayor Driscoll on, and Salem – man, okay, here it is. Salem – with 170 cases and three residents having died. 170, three deaths, okay? Beverly with 147 cases, 14 deaths. So they have less cases, more deaths. And then if you look at Lynn is reporting 621 cases and 11 deaths. And so they have many more cases, but less deaths than Beverly. So it's you never know how it is. That data in little snippets is interesting, but you know, we're all about the data, we're told. And so those are just three communities. I'm not saying they're similar communities, but they're, you know, we compare them from time to time, Salem, Beverly, and Lynn. So just mm-hmm. throwing that out there.
What will be interesting to see is the tracing of it and what, where the commonality is. Was there a place or places where some of the people all came in contact with each other? You've had issues in the western part of the state with a nursing home where there was several people who passed. You had the issues early on in Washington State, again, an elderly housing. It'll be, I'm sure there are others that are already looking at this, but it would be interesting to see how it's not Beverly, but it might be the music theater, or it might be the McDonald's, or it might be a particular venue where people interacted and it passed from person to person.
I think one of the issues I found interesting was Wendell Waters is writing up in the Tri-Town transcript about Middleton going to the requiring of wearing you know, face coverings, and where they're a little bit different from everybody else, they're providing for a fine of up to $1,000 for violations. And Middleton Board of Health has issued an order to further limit the spread of COVID-19. It requires people in certain circumstances to wear a face mask, requires proper disposal of gloves and other potentially contaminated items, and provides for a fine up to $1,000 for violations. So that's kind of a new wrinkle.
Yeah, a lot of Salem went into the face mask thing late last week. Lynn ordered the face masks in going into businesses over the weekend. Lynn also instituted a curfew. I don't have the hours exactly, but I want to say it's 9 p.m. to 6 a.m., but don't hold me to that piece. But that tells me that Lynn is saying, hey, some of you people aren't social distancing if they're issuing a curfew. So, again, of course, they had the 621 confirmed cases as of yesterday.
Well, a lot of what you're finding across the country is that the greatest impacted areas are the higher density, and I think that it stands to reason that Lynn, given its population density, is going to be ahead of others in terms of reported cases. What we don't know is where each city and town is in relation to hitting the peak and where it levels off. And I see that the news articles for the different elected and appointed officials are reporting in that we haven't reached our peak yet. The worst is still yet to come. So mayor of Malden is, you know, trying to get the folks to sign on that, you know, we're not out of the woods yet here.
Yeah. And just to transfer, you know, the Daily Item today ran a front page, which is a little bit different, one of their feature front pages, where they have eight different photographs of eight different people working and basically keeping the company, the region open. They included a UPS driver, a Dunkin' Donuts staffer, a U.S. postal worker, a trash collector, someone from a grocery store, someone from a liquor store, someone from a bank, and then a gas station attendant, all incredibly key people trying to keep the economy going or keeping us supplied. So at least we have those services still available to us.
Josh, final thoughts?
No, I on a lighter note, I posted the other day that the Red Sox were still undefeated this year, and so that got a lot of likes.
Okay. All right. Now we'll see if there's ever going to be any sports again. Boys, we'll talk a little bit later. I will be checking in with Bill Kirk from the Merrimack Valley in a little while, the Eagle Eye on the Merrimack Valley. And we still have another interview to go with Dave Kemsky, the president of AET Labs. So we'll check in with you guys later.
Very well.
All right. Thank you, boys. All right. We'll be right back. Okay, now we're with the owner of Advanced Educational Technology Labs, Dave Kemsky, and a fascinating story. Dave, how are you?
Doing great under the circumstances.
Absolutely. Tell me about the circumstances. Now, your business I didn't know about, and it's fascinating to me. You offer educational technological software or hardware. Explain that to me.
Well, what we do is we design and outfit technical labs for high schools, colleges, and universities.
That sounds fascinating. How'd you get started with that?
Oh, gosh, it would take a long time for me to really go back, but just been in the industry since about 2005 and grown it since.
Given the fact that so many kids now are involved with technology online, and plus the circumstances, what are some of the products? What are your main products? Who do you distribute it to in the area? Do you deal with high schools or colleges or junior colleges in the area?
Absolutely. You know, up on the North Shore, Essex North Shore Tech, mm-hmm. Gloucester High School, some of our notable customers. I mean, right here in Manchester, Essex, Ipswich High School, Marblehead High School. So that's just... on the North Shore, but in town, major universities like MIT, Harvard University, Boston University. But our main focus is with solutions, is helping out the schools set up labs. And these could be for 3D printers, for additive manufacturing, advanced manufacturing. But 3D printing has been kind of the hot button over the past couple of years. But not only that, but makerspaces, fab labs, that kind of makes it a little more general in terms of equipment that you'd find in there. So things
okay.
like lasers.
All right. Hold on, dude. You're talking now jargon to me. So let's go back to 3D, yeah. 3D printers and then maker bots. So go back to that and explain that to me, the great unwashed.
Yeah, well, a lot of schools these days have looked at technical education to be more of a hands-on process. So schools that traditionally, comprehensive schools that weren't doing a lot of hands-on, realized that, you know, a great way of learning and through STEM education is through making things. So that came the term makerspace, fab labs, idea space. I mean, there's whole all different types of names, but the whole goal of those programs is for students to kind of to build things, you know, just think outside the box and make things. And during this crisis, what's been great is a lot of these makerspaces have been called upon to use their resources to make things to help throughout the crisis. And one of the things that we've been involved in has been making face shields for local hospitals and beyond, I should say, too. And so that's how that's what we've been doing here at our office, because we have some equipment in this location. But we also connected with some folks at Medtronic. They really have been great during this whole process, and they set us up with a special CAD design that the 3D printer runs on, and that's what we've been printing out is one of their designs. And they've also graciously they've donated material so we can actually build these. And also some of the other materials. And what we've in turn done, Mark Lyons from AET, he's gone to all of his clients and beyond. These are at the vocational technical high schools all throughout New England, and he's kind of gathered, you know, by pushing out this call with printing these. He's gotten I can't remember involved, but they're printing the same thing, mm-hmm. and they're donating them through their local hospital, whoever needs them.
Well, I should point out that a lot of that's available to our listeners at aelabs.com. You'll see Mark Lyons on there, working with Essex Tech and so on. That's what sort of got us turned on to this, and also with one of the students over at Manchester Essex Regional High School. If I could, Dave, before we get to more about the face shields and what you guys are doing, the fabulous work that you're doing, can you just run through me what a high school, let me just pick Gloucester High School. The CAD program over there, I do know Chip Kistner very well, but what would you do? A high school teacher gets a hold of you guys and says he wants something, he wants a lab, he wants software, he wants hardware. Can you just, you know, put me through a quick model on that?
Yeah. It starts, we kind of go way back and say, you know, what's the need? You know, why do you want to do this? And so we don't want to just, you know, throw... You know, we don't want the school to throw dollars at equipment that won't be right for them. So there's kind of a process we go through interviewing the instructors, you know, that might be involved, or just having a conversation and to learn a little bit more about their program and then offer out solutions, really. But we take them through the whole process, not only from the consulting, the design of the lab if they have a need for a complete lab. But also just walking through them afterward, the setup and of the equipment. Mm-hmm. Some of this stuff is a bit complex. We also do a lot of professional development with them throughout the years that's offered, and we have service and support. So we're there for the long haul with them. and want to help them the best that we can.
How big is the 3D printer? I almost want to call it a revolution, but how big is that now with respect to what you're doing in terms of colleges and schools and so on, or elsewhere, and the fact that you're able to do what you're doing to help out in this crisis? How big is the 3D printer thing?
The 3D printing or additive manufacturing market has just skyrocketed, and you know, we've got to that point where it's matured enough where if you look at a curve, most of these crazy technologies, they come to light and they kind of go straight up. And then once people realize, oh, I can't just have a 3D printer in my house and do, print out spare parts when I need them. Once they get to that point, there's this disillusionment that they get. But once all of a sudden that they realize, oh, well, I can use this for making shields for this cause, or I can use it for doing whatever it might be, prototyping some part for an idea that I had. Then all of a sudden they turn around and they realize, wow, look where I can use this. And so that we're at that point where the masses of people are at that point realizing the practical applications for 3D printing. And also materials is what drives it. And so the metal 3D printing, metal additive manufacturing that market is really starting to gear up as well. So it's maturing. It's maturing. And it's just going to continue to grow.
Is this a learning curve for you, or have you been out ahead of that with the 3D stuff?
I like to think we've been out ahead of it. And we work with some very progressive companies that have been in this market for many years. So we really do have an edge, I think, on a lot of people. And the goal is to make sure the students are aware of that and they can use that. They learn on real industrial equipment, and they're prepared when they get out into the field with certifications and train the best they can be.
So many businesses are contributing right now during this emergency. They're going above and beyond. And it sounds like AET Labs is doing the same, and you're producing face shields. Is that what you were saying?
Yeah, we're producing really the frames. We're doing the whole thing. It's really an interesting design. We're able to 3D print the frame, and then the frame has like three little nubs that stick out, and really simple transparent film. These are the guys at Medtronic that figured, hey, just get some transparent film. Use a three-hole punch, and the face shield pops right on.
Okay.
Put a rubber band around the back of it and you can keep it on your head. They work great. We've had a lot of feedback from hospital staff workers and that it said that it has been great.
And I taught math for years, and sometimes when I talk calculus with people, they say, it sounds like Greek to me. And everything you've just said today, Dave, it sounds very, very advanced to me. But you guys are getting it out there in the neighborhood and getting it out into the community. And it sounds like from A to Z, you guys are covering the gamut. And really, your business covers from the small to the large. Is that not, because you mentioned MIT and other schools?
Yeah, we're located in New England. We're for New England. That's kind of as far as we go. So all corners of New England, down as far as southern Connecticut, bordering New York, all the way up to the far reaches of Maine. So we are all over New England.
All right. Finally, Dave, can you tell me anything else you'd like to mention about AET Labs with respect to your product that you get out there, or the current emergency that we're in?
The only thing I want to say is thank you to all of our healthcare workers, doctors, nurses, people in the front lines, and don't forget all the people that are still out there doing things like making deliveries and all those people that are kind of putting themselves on the line, first responders and everything, and just want to say thanks to all of them.
That is Dave Kemsky, who is the owner of the Advanced Educational Technologies Labs, and this is MSONewsSports.com. And we are back right now on Connections. Thank you for being with us here, and thank you to Dave Kremsky. Appreciate that. Talking right now with Bill Kirk, the Eagle Eye on the Merrimack Valley. Of course, Lawrence Eagle Tribune reporter Bill Kirk. It's been, I don't know, quite a while, Bill. How you doing?
Oh, pretty good. You know, just at home, working from home. Just trying to, keep my head down here with this coronavirus flying all over the place. That sort of seems to be the big story these days.
That's all we've been talking about. And I know what's interesting, we're working from home. I'm just looking at AAA right now. And AAA Northeast, April 13 survey of prices in Massachusetts, self-serve, regular, unleaded, $1.94 a gallon. And so it's like,
that's the average.
Yeah, $1.94 a gallon, and of course we can't go out. So you know,
I know, yeah, exactly. You're not, but yeah, that's the cruel irony of that that statistic right there.
Oh man,
we can't go anywhere. I mean, it's good for. I imagine it's good for the truckers. You know, the long haul.
Oh yeah, yeah.
All the stuff around the country right now. God bless them, because if it weren't for them, we wouldn't have food in the grocery stores and convenience stores, which are the lifeline really for everybody right now.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a new look at society, the stratas of society when this is all over. Bill, I want to start. I want to start with an article you wrote, because I just read something in Middleton. I read from the Tri-Town Transcript that they're ramping up fines to be $1,000 if you're out of compliance with wearing face coverings and so on. And you wrote a story about in Lawrence $300 fines. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about what the mayor's thinking over there.
Yeah, well, the mayor and his administration have been pretty aggressive on this thing, probably because the numbers in Lawrence are so high. I'm not sure. They're getting close to 1,000 cases in Lawrence. I mean, as you might imagine, it's a pretty congested city. You know, it's like the problem they had in New York City where, everybody's sort of jammed in together. But what he's done is there's businesses that they call essential businesses, and these are convenience stores, grocery stores, any place that's open, I guess, right now. And what the mayor was concerned about was that people were getting too, were not going along with the 6-foot distance rule. And I don't know if you've been out, but I went to 7-Eleven recently, and they have X's on the floor where you have to keep, 6 feet behind the person in front of you. They've done the same at Shaw's, and they've done something similar at Market Basket. In that case, they put a line. So when you're standing in line, you're always 6 feet away from the person in front of you. So what he's saying is that if these businesses don't, the essential businesses don't comply with this, he's going to have inspectors going around doing spot checks and finding these businesses, to implement these guidelines or rules or whatever they are. I mean, there's a lot of terminology being thrown around by the state and local government as to what's a directive versus a guideline versus a suggestion. I think, in the end, they're just trying to keep everybody to stay as far apart as possible from each other. So that's something they've done in Lawrence. In Methuen, I'm actually working on a story right now. The mayor there, and with the support of the city council, it's a story that's going to be in tomorrow's paper or be online later today, probably. They've implemented the same kind of rules, but for city parks. And city parks are a little tougher, obviously, because you're outside. And I guess what they found was the kids were playing, or people were playing soccer or softball or some sort of semi-organized game, and they weren't paying attention to the distancing rules. So they implemented fines for that. So if the police are driving around and they see, a bunch of people playing softball or touch football, or they can potentially, they'll get a warning first, and then potentially they could be fined for not complying with that distance rule. But at the same time, you can go out walking or running as long as that's the other thing that's sort of funny about all these rules is, let's say you're a married couple and you live together and you're always close to each other, so those rules obviously don't apply. So if you're walking around on the track and you're right next to each other, you obviously you're not violating the social distancing rule, although technically you are, but I don't think you're going to get fined for that.
So, I hope not.
These are some of the questions that come up.
Oh, yeah. You know, an article I see, Bill, that you wrote, concerned nurses in the Methuen-Lawrence area, and this, what do they call it, tracking? I forget what it's called, but where you have to backtrack and see who contacted whom and how valuable some of the resources are among nurses and so on.
Right. That's going to become an even bigger thing coming up, and if they want to go back, if they want to bring, you know, reopen the economy, is tracking and tracing. So you want to obviously find out who has the disease and tell them, you know, they have to stay home till they get better, or you know, go to a doctor, or the other thing is, so a lot of people I think you're going to find have the disease. But are asymptomatic, so that's going to become, you know, as the testing ramps up. So it's all, everything kind of seems to work together. So the testing ramps up, and more people are seen to have the disease or not. So let's say, you know, you find somebody has the disease but doesn't show any symptoms. Well, you got to, in that case, you say, okay, you have to quarantine or self quarantine or isolate. And then who were you in contact with recently? Well, then, so that's where these local nurses come into action, you know, city nurses, school nurses, and Lawrence's case, so you're using health inspectors and even some of the building inspectors and electrical inspectors, and everybody's getting on the phone and calling around to see who has contact, and if you've had contact with somebody with coronavirus, then you have to quarantine for 14 days, and that's what they're telling people. Now, they're not tracking those people so much as they're tracking the people that actually have the disease, because I think what they're doing is they have to call pretty much every day. They get a call from a nurse. How are you doing? How are you feeling? What's your temperature? You know, are you staying isolated from everybody in your household and your family? And, you know, that's going to be a really important way of containing, it is a really important way of containing this virus.
You know, Bill, things change not only from day to day, but sometimes from hour to hour. And you're in your command center, I'm sure, in your studio and your workplace. But in talking with the mayor and people in government, it must be a continuous situation. And I wonder what the attitude is among the people you've been talking with, Bill. You know, the people you have interviewed, how are they dealing with this? And what's the attitude? I know that in talking with the Salem mayor yesterday, she was very, I don't want to say upbeat, but very positive in how people are dealing with this across the spectrum.
Yeah, I think that's the nature of being, you know, an elected official. You have to try to exude some level of of optimism and positivity. Right? And I get that from a lot of the mayors that they try to be positive. At the same time, it's like you said, it's a constantly changing thing. It's like a wave. You know, the wave comes in and the wave goes out and it comes back in again, and it's different. I mean, it's just this constant barrage of information and, you know, oftentimes bad news. You know, you get these nursing homes where people are dying, I mean, in large numbers. And every community has nursing homes, so, especially the bigger cities. So, you know, and these are all people that you know, if you're a Methuen resident, you know, you have relatives. So senior care homes and centers, and so it's very personal. I mean, these aren't just statistics; these are actual people, and I think that probably, as much as anything, has got to be hard on an elected official. You know, hearing from their constituents, what can I do? What can I do? You know, my grandmother or my great grandmother is in such and such a place. How do I get her out of there? You know, what do I? You know. Can I get her out of there? I mean, and if she gets sick, I can't visit her, they won't let me. I think that's got a weigh on elected officials. But they, you know what? At the same time, I think they're working so hard. These guys, these folks, that they're working so hard and so fast, and stuff is coming at them so quickly that they almost don't have time to, you know, sit back and take a breath. I think there's just There's just so much going on. And a big part of it I see is how do you continue having, you know, a legislative government? I mean, you know, we have a city council, you know, we have a mayor, you know, and we have all the departments. Now, all of them have to stay away from each other. So how do you govern in that kind of an environment? And I think that's a big issue that a lot of cities and towns are dealing with. And they're, you know, they have Zoom, which is that meeting application, but that prevents the public input. So you don't have the same kind of, it's not the same kind of interaction with the public that you might have. So if you have a big issue and you want the public to be able to comment on it, how do you do that? Well, right now, I don't think anybody has really figured that out. There isn't really a way to do that. So they're doing, you know, the city councilors have these Zoom meetings. I guess there's a way, in Methuen they figured out a way, and I'll be doing a story on this later this week. In Methuen they figured out a way to do it so that you can actually sign up and talk at a meeting, but it's not the same. It's really a lot different than it used to be. It's not nearly as much of a democracy. You know, it's like the same thing with Andover, North Andover, your town meetings. I mean, obviously you're not going to be able to have a town meeting. And a town meeting is the cornerstone of these town governments. I mean, Danvers has a town meeting. Middleton, Topsfield, Boxford, they all have town meetings. I mean, it's going to have some kind of a huge impact on these towns, because I don't see how they're going to get their budgets passed. I don't see how they're going to get their school. You know, the school budgets are critical, you know, moving forward. And that's a whole other thing. What are schools going to do going forward? I mean, if they cancel for the rest of the year, how do you give credit for a half of your school? I mean, do you have to start all over again in the fall? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's just a whole lot of questions.
Well, these are all questions that you're asking, and you're going to get answers to, I'm sure, over the next X number of months.
Yeah.
And it may go a lot longer than that, but those are all valid. And everybody's sitting back to some extent wanting to know the answer to that. But in the short term, you know, people are just looking, okay, are the numbers better today than they were yesterday? And, you know, it's a continuum that it's still on the way up, obviously. Bill, is there anything else that you'd like to mention? And then before you go, I want you to tease again what you've got coming up in the paper.
Well, I think we talked about this last time, that it's an international, national, state, and local story. And the only way you're going to find out what's really going on in your local community, and that's where, you know, the rubber meets the road, so to speak, and that's where you find out the local impact of this international. I just people to get your local paper, find out what's going on, go online, subscribe online. When people subscribe online, they get a lot more information than just, you know, clicking occasionally on the website. And just as far as, you know, going forward, I mean, we're going to have, you know, the Eagle Tribune is filled with stories about the local impact of the coronavirus, as is, you know, the Gloucester Times, as is the Salem News and Newburyport Daily News. Those are all our papers, obviously. So everybody's, you know, the push is on to get that information out there for people.
Well, we lean very heavily on those, Bill, and you're right. I don't think social media, I don't think that what we do, I know that we can't cover this stuff the way that you guys do in detail, and I highly, highly recommend that people do that. If you can't get the paper in print, go online and check it out. All the articles are there. And, yeah, if you don't have a subscription, by all means, do so. And in the meantime, Bill, you know, be safe, and we'll check in. We'll do this again maybe in a week or so.
That sounds great.
All right, Bill, be safe, and thank you so much.
Okay, thank you, Rick.
Take care, Bill. Well. Yep, take care. That's Bill Kirk, who was a reporter for the Lawrence Eagle Tribune. And again, all the reporters we talked to were very, very grateful for the help. They're able to flesh out stories that we can only touch upon and do these interviews with. And that's one thing that's great about radio, albeit internet radio, is that you go to the source and you get them in their own voices. We don't quote people. We get them If you have advice, if you have some recommendations or something you'd like to pass along to us, please do so at msonewsports@gmail.com, msonewsports@gmail.com. So I want to thank our guest today. Very insightful, informative hour, I think. I want to believe. I want to thank Sailor Mayor Kim Driscoll, Beverly Representative Jerry Parasella, David Kemsky, the president of AET Labs, and, of course, Bill Kirk from the Lawrence Eagle Tribune. And, of course, to our crew, Bill Newell, Josh Arnold, and our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. Thank you, one and all. And please join us again on Thursday live at 10 a.m. for our next Connections broadcast, when we will have even more guests, more officials, and so on. And we expect to be talking with former senatorial candidate Beth Lindstrom about businesses. Hope to have Dave Radigan on Thursday. And also could be talking with Lynn Mayor Thomas McGee, among our other guests. So thank you very much for joining us. This has been Connections on msonewsports.com. I'm Rick Moore. Be safe and do the right thing.